Hey, everyone. Welcome to Stutter Talk, episode 616 for April 9th, 2017. This is the Stuttering at Passover Seder edition, or maybe we'll call this Reclaiming Our Stuttering Space edition. I'm your host, Peter Reitzis in North Carolina, and I'd like to welcome first-time guest doctoral student Naomi Hertzberg Rogers. Hey, Naomi.
Hey, Peter. Thanks for having me.
Oh, thanks for being a guest. Naomi is joining us via Skype from Iowa City, Iowa, at probably the most famous speech language pathology research department in the world, maybe? I hate to leave anybody out, but it's a pretty famous university speech department you're in. You probably hear that all the time.
Yeah, we our department is pretty steeped in some rich history for sure.
Yeah, just to name drop a few: Wendell Johnson, Dean Williams. So, and now you work with the amazing Patricia Zebrowski. So you are around legends.
Yeah, to say the least, it's big shoes to fill.
Big shoes. So Naomi Hertzberg Rogers is a doctoral student in the Department of Communication Sciences and Disorders at the University of Iowa, a speech language pathologist and a person who stutters. Mrs. Hertzberg Rogers leads the Iowa City chapter of the National Stuttering Association, the NSA for short, and her research focuses on the cognitive and emotional factors related to stuttering and stuttering intervention among children and adolescents. And you made some great comments about stuttering and the Jewish holiday of Passover on Facebook, and I'm so glad you are coming on air to talk about that today.
Yeah, I'm honored to be a part of a conversation. Yeah, I was, as I had read your post on the Stutter Talk Facebook page yesterday, I was really surprised by this kind of like emotional reaction that I had when I was reading your post, and that I hadn't really thought much about these really painful memories I have of reading aloud at the Passover table. And so just reading your post just like really brought up a lot of stuff for me that I hadn't really thought about in a while.
Yeah. And I'm getting the chills now because, you know, we deal with stuttering all the time, and yet those scars are still there. And so we're helping ourselves, we're helping others, and we're still dealing with those years of pain and joy. Yeah. Too.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So just a couple notes here. So a few years ago, I recorded one of my favorite episodes ever with Dr. Phil Schneider, episode 434. The topic was Moses and stuttering, and that pertains to this topic. So we're going to link to it from this episode, Stutter Talk 616. And for those who don't know much about the Jewish holiday of Passover, here's just some brief background. The Jewish holiday of Passover commemorates the liberation of the Jewish people from slavery. As a child, I always looked forward to looking for the matzah, which my grandfather would hide in the house. Did you look for matzah too?
Yeah, we definitely looked for the afikoman around the house every year.
Yes, the afikoman, which I was afraid to say for years because of that vowel onset. Mm. So, yes. And for those who don't know, matzah is unleavened bread. That's like a cracker. And for Passover, Jews have a Seder. It's a ritual feast and service that welcomes the beginning of Passover. It's a big meal that probably looks a lot like an Easter Sunday meal. So during the Seder at the dinner table, the youngest member of the family traditionally reads the four questions. Reading the four questions is a form of role-playing and empathy-building that attempts to help us absorb and better understand what others have experienced. And it can be quite an ordeal, right, for a person who stutters. And I know, Naomi, that you are the youngest in your family. So were you called upon to read the four questions? And what was that like for you?
Yeah. I am the youngest member of my family. And so every year when I knew that the Passover Seder was coming up, I mean, I would be anxious for days leading up to it. I think that what was so anxiety inducing about the experience of reading these questions aloud with my whole family present was that I had done a really wonderful job of hiding stuttering for a very, very long time. And so what's tough about that is that because I was so good at hiding stuttering, my family didn't really know that it was a big deal to me and that it played such a huge role in forming my identity as a communicator. And there's nobody else in my family who stutters. And so all of that combined, I felt like no one really understood my experiences. And so I felt really comfortable not letting them in into that experience that I was having. And so I did a really great job of hiding my stuttering, but that kind of fell apart when I was asked to read aloud. Because reading aloud means I couldn't hide my stuttering anymore. I couldn't change my words. I couldn't pretend not to know what to say. And so reading aloud was very exposing, and it made me feel really, really vulnerable. And so as a child who stutters at the Passover table, I always felt incredibly anxious because I knew that I was about to struggle with reading the four questions in front of my whole family, and I didn't want them to see me struggle, and I didn't really want me or my stuttering to really be exposed.
You've said so many powerful things there, that you were really comfortable with not letting your family in on your pain or your secret. And that's wonderful. You should really write, because that's beautiful. And you mentioned how when you had to read aloud, things fell apart. And I think what you're saying is that you could not hide your stuttering anymore. Is that correct?
Right. So in conversation, I was an expert at switching words and avoiding stuttering at all costs by pretending not to know, you know, the answers to questions, or pretending like I didn't have anything to say. And so I did a great job of hiding stuttering. But when you're asked to read aloud in front of a group and you have a text in front of you, there's no changing words. You can't pretend to not know how to read. And so it was just extremely exposing, because in that moment I had no choice but to stutter. And that was just really hard for me when I had, you know, expended all this energy for years and years and years to not let myself stutter in front of people.
And it's such a weird moment, at least for me, because it's such a loving time, and it's a great holiday. And in my house, I was surrounded by four grandparents every year, aunts and uncles, neighbors, just a loving place. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, all eyes turn on you and you have to speak. And the juxtaposition with all that is sort of amazing. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you experienced that too.
Yeah, you know, you bring up a really interesting point. So on the one hand, you know, being in this space with the people that are closest to you in your family. But on the other hand, if you haven't been open about your biggest struggle in your life with these people that you love and that you feel close to, I mean, that's a really hard divide, you know, to straddle. And so I think that it almost made it even more difficult, because I felt like, you know, as much as I did love these people and I did feel loved in return, like this big part of me, like this big secret that I didn't want to address or talk about was standing in the way.
Yeah. Wow. So I'm going to ask you in just a moment what you did at the table when you had to read. Now, I had a younger sister, so I only had to deal with this for a few years. But my memories are faint. I hate to use a word like repressed, but I do think that it was so awful that I did sort of like block some of it out. But I do have a faint memory of using learning disabilities as a crutch. So I do recall someone saying, well, reading's hard for Peter. Can you do it, David, my brother, who was happy to do it? And then when I got older, my sister could do it. So I got out of that. And of course, I imagine I probably went to the bathroom sometimes when it was time to read. I'm sure I don't have any memory of actually stuttering when reading the questions. I have memories of avoidance, avoidance, avoidance. What are your memories? Did you try? Did you stutter? What happened?
Yeah, so I do have memories of, you know, being the youngest person in the family and most people not like most people other than my mom and my dad, not knowing that I stuttered. And so, I remember not getting out of it more so because I felt like I had this duty that I had to do it. And so in our family, because no one except for my older brother and I, had gone to Hebrew school. And so we were really the only ones, who spoke Hebrew. And so what I would do for the four questions is I would read the questions in Hebrew. But on top of that, then I would also read the English translations of the questions. And then I would, you know, answer the questions in English or read the explanations for the questions. So there was just a lot of reading.
Wow. So it was like 16 questions. Wow. Okay. I'm sorry. Wow. So you really had, yeah. It wasn't, wow, that's a lot of talking. So what happened?
Yeah. So, you know, there was a lot of course, there was just a lot of stress that was wrapped up in that. I would feel anxious for days, but then the moment would arise and I would do it. And I would just, I'm sure that I was just like, you know, beat red in the face and struggled a lot. And then once I would finish reading the questions and the explanations for the answers, I would just feel an incredible amount of shame afterwards. You know, I would just feel this messy combination of, you know, I was angry at stuttering. I would be really disappointed in myself for not reading fluently or for letting myself stutter. And I think also I would feel I would feel like I was letting my family down because I couldn't really fulfill this tradition in the way that it was expected. And so looking back now, I've realized that I was much too hard on myself, you know, and I'm sure that if I had opened up to my family and just had been open about how this thing is really anxiety inducing for me and that, I do believe that there would have been ways that I could have handled that situation in a way that wouldn't have left me so scarred. but it's easier to realize that now, you know, years and years and years later.
I think you really got to the core of so much of the stuttering pain when you said that you didn't feel that you were living up to the tradition of what was expected. And isn't that so true of stuttering? Like when we stutter, we feel like we're letting someone down. I mean, I don't want to talk for you, but it sounds like that's kind of what you're saying.
Yeah. And again, I think that was just my own expectation, right? We just have this expectation for ourselves that things are going to go smoothly and easily and that talking should be easy and effortless. And I think that, that in that moment, I just felt like I was living up to this expectation, even though that expectation was never explicitly stated. You know, I never heard from anybody in my family that that they were upset that I was stuttering or that I should, you know, read fluently. I never heard any of those messages. It was all like self-induced.
I agree with you, and I wonder where it comes from because it is self-induced, but it also comes from somewhere. So I'm just wondering, like I do have distinct memories of neighbor children making fun of me, and I had a strong dislike for that. So it is self-induced in the sense of we're often the ones holding ourselves back, but I do think it comes from somewhere. Like at some point, somebody is showing us through something, like an action, a verbal response, or something that we shouldn't be talking like this. I don't know if you agree with that, but that's what I'm thinking.
Yeah, no, I definitely think that there's a lot of merit to that. You know, it's almost as if our self-induced, you know, expectations are a result of us paying really acute attention to our listeners and how they respond to the way or to us stuttering. So I definitely do think that it's a combination of both of us being very attuned to other people's reactions to our stuttering, but also this self-induced kind of expectation that, you know, I'm supposed to be talking fluently. And so I think that it's, and I don't know which one weighs heavier, and I'm sure that it's different for a lot of people.
So would you be willing to reclaim some stuttering space with me today and we will share reading the four questions?
I'm always about reclaiming the stuttering space. So yes.
All right. So let's reclaim the stuttering space. I will honestly say to you, I don't know if I've ever read these questions. So it feels a little emotional because I spent my whole childhood trying not to read them.
Sure.
I also want to let the listeners know that we're not trying to convert you to Judaism. And this is not a religious statement. This is about reclaiming some space that, I feel that I really didn't experience as a child or didn't experience with joy as a child. And I wish, you know, I could have experienced this better. Let's reclaim it. How about I read questions 1 and 3 and you can read 2 and 4?
Okay, it sounds good.
Okay. So the intro, why is this night different from all other nights? And I'll say this is what Jewish families around the world are going to be doing on Passover. Question 1. On all other nights, we eat leavened products and matzah, and on this night, only matzah.
On all other nights, we eat all vegetables, and on this night, only bitter herbs.
On all other nights, we don't dip our food even once. And on this night, we dip twice.
On all other nights, we eat sitting or reclining. And on this night, we only recline.
Thanks for doing that with me. I'm not going to ask you to read them in Hebrew and then answer them in two languages. But as I was reading it, I made a point to stutter on some of the sounds I would have stuttered on as a child. I was scared of D's, L's, M's, and N's, and that felt really good. I don't know how it felt to you.
Yeah, I definitely included some voluntary stutters in there, and it felt easy and it felt good. So I'm glad we just did that.
Me too, and I don't know if I've ever done that. So thank you. This is Stutter Talk. I'm Peter Reitzes here with Naomi Hertzberg Rogers, who is a doctoral student in the Department of Communication Sciences and Disorders at the University of Iowa. She's also a speech language pathologist and a person who stutters. So I just got back. I was just at Hebrew school with my children. And while they were in their classes, I was sitting there reading up on Passover. And I was reading that many families actually chant or sing the 4 questions. And I was sort of surprised because I don't think I've ever been at a Passover Seder where the 4 questions were sung. I was wondering, did you ever get the chance to sing them?
So at home when we would do the Seder, I would just read them. I never had a lot of faith in my singing voice. So I kind of just, I would just read them. But you do bring up an interesting point that I wonder if my experience would have been different if had I sung them instead of read them aloud. Cause I wonder if, you know, because I was just reading, I was struggling a lot, with stuttering, and just what we know about singing is that, it's a fluency inducing kind of context. And so I wonder if my memories of that experience would have been different had I sung them.
Yeah, I was thinking that too. And then I was thinking that if we would have been a little bit more aware of stuttering, a lot more aware of stuttering, and I don't blame anybody because my family really, really tried. I had a lot of problems as a kid. I had learning disabilities, which was forefront. But I wonder, instead of my brother being asked to read the questions by himself, if we would have been asked to read them in chorus. Mm-hmm. And you know, I don't think I would have ever made this suggestion in past years, but looking back, I would have been able to participate. And I'm certainly not trying to send the message that stuttering's not okay. I'm not trying to say that at all. But looking back, I was in such a bad place with stuttering that reading in chorus would have been a way that I wouldn't have had to have worried for days and weeks about this event. And it would have been a way I could have participated with either joy or just not misery. What do you think of that?
I think that's a really interesting thought. And as I was reflecting on my experiences and in preparation for talking with you today, I was thinking about what would I have done differently as a child, to make that experience a little bit more either easier or more joyful. One of them was actually just being open with my parents and like just letting them know that this was a situation that I was feeling extremely anxious about, really nervous about, and ask them if we could brainstorm some ideas for ways that it could be different. And one of the things I thought was, wow, like wouldn't it have been really awesome if we could have just read in unison, either with me and my brother or with everybody as a group, and not just because that would be fluency inducing, but also just because the message behind that is, we're all in this together. Mm. And as a family, we can all come together when someone's struggling, like help them out. And that's kind of my, how I thought about that.
Yeah. Those are great points. And I was thinking of along the same lines, and my family was so loving, but when I tried to talk to them about stuttering as an adult, my grandparents didn't really have much space for it. So I don't know about your family, but my family at the Seder table was like 18 people talking at once. Mm. But it's definitely worth a family discussion, because I'm sure if we, being me, my mom and my dad, would have been able to verbalize, this is hard for Peter. We need to act a certain way. We need to be supportive. I think it would have happened, or some version of it would have happened. So I studied for a few weeks at the University of Iowa with a Stuttering Foundation program. It was such a wonderful experience. For those who are interested in such experiences, you can visit the Stuttering Foundation at stutteringhelp.org, because they offer workshops at the University of Iowa with your department, Naomi, as I know you know. And so I got into Iowa and was walking by the campus, and like I've only been there for a few minutes, and somebody walks up to me who's clearly a rabbi, and he says to me, "Are you Jewish?" And I said, "Yes, I am." And he said, "You gotta come to my house tonight for the Sabbath." You're more, and so like I know there is a community in Iowa. So if you find yourself at a Passover table this week with people you don't know well, do you think some of these fears would pop right back up?
Oh, sure. especially if I was just at a stranger's home and nobody knew who I was or spent all my time thinking about, they wouldn't know that stuttering is such a huge part of my life, or that I am a person who stutters. And so in that moment too, I thought about that. It's like, well, I would love to disclose in that environment, but like, when is the best time to disclose it? Like when everyone's going around the table and it happens to be your turn, you're going to like stop like all the prayers and the verses to say, "Hey, before I read, like, I should let you guys know that I stutter." I just it wouldn't be very natural. So I think that it would take a little finesse in terms of figuring out, kind of like the right moment to, disclose and just make that environment more comfortable for everybody and that experience more, okay for me.
Yeah. Yeah. This gets into also advice giving, right? And like, so I'm going to ask you what advice you have for other stutterers, but I'll also acknowledge that it wasn't that long ago that I went to a Seder with my wife, with her side of the family, and a lot of people I didn't know, like friends of friends. And there must have been like 40 plus people at the table. Mm-hmm. And we went around introducing ourselves, and guess who's last? The stutterer. Mm-hmm. And I worried the whole time, and it was my turn. It was really hard for me to say my name. And then I thought, well, gee, am I really going to advertise? I mean, now everyone's really waiting for the food, and I'm the last one to go. And it's not easy. So acknowledging that it's not easy, do you have any advice for your fellow stutterers?
I mean, wow, that's a huge group of people, and like, what a hard experience. That's really tough. I think that for me personally, ways that I have made stuttering more comfortable for me, in new environments. And I could imagine doing this if I were invited to a stranger's home for holidays. Thinking about ways that I can stutter with confidence. And so ways that I do that are, you know, I try my hardest to maintain eye contact when I'm stuttering. I try hard not to hide it, right? And just just letting it out, and maybe even using some voluntaries could help. And then I'm really open about stuttering. I talk about being a person who stutters with a lot of different people. I think it's easier for me just because I'm a speech language pathologist and I also research stuttering. And so me being a person who stutters is kind of wrapped up in everything that I do. And so I think it might be a little bit, finding that right moment to disclose is a little bit easier for me just because stuttering is such a huge part of who I am in a lot of different ways. Over the past couple of years, I've developed kind of like a lighthearted way of talking about stuttering and like not being afraid to joke about it. Or if I get really stuck on a word, you know, just kind of laughing it off and kind of joking about it. And I've noticed that sometimes helps me feel a bit more comfortable and helps the listener also feel a bit, more at ease. And so I definitely think that there are ways kind of above and beyond just advertising or disclosing that have helped me feel okay with stuttering with new people.
That is really great advice. And I'll only add, recently I've been trying to remind myself in different situations that how other people choose to act is not a reflection on me. So, you know, if somebody, because I think there's this fear, I'll speak for myself, there's this fear of what happens when I stutter, what will the other person do? Mm. And, you know, at the old age of 45, I'm starting to get a little more comfortable with just reminding myself that I'm not responsible for other people's bad decisions. And the more I allow myself to put my stuttering out there, the more I find out that there are people who make really nice, sincere, friendly decisions. So I do have a lot of faith in our fellow human beings. And so I liked your message of stuttering with confidence. Do you have time for two more questions?
Sure. Yeah, go ahead.
Stutter Talk with our guest, Naomi Hertzberg Rogers. So Donna Quiesel wrote a note on the Stutter Talk Facebook page, and her husband, Bob Quiesel, has been a regular guest on Stutter Talk. And Bob was good friends with the well-known Dean Williams, who was at the University of Iowa. Mm-hmm. And here's what Donna wrote. So Dean Williams was a person who stutters and a speech language pathologist, and she wrote that he talked about that lovely conditioned response hitting him when he went back to his home church to speak. He had suffered trying to say memory verses in the front of the church as a child, and the same emotions came back when he went back as an adult who had had many successful public speaking experiences as an adult. And then Ms. Quiesel lets us know, you are in good company. Does it help at all to know that people who stutter, like Dean Williams, who also was a speech language pathologist, still as an adult would go back to church and find it hard to manage stuttering?
Yeah, I mean, that is comforting to know that, you know, we're not alone. And I also, I mean, I think that it really helps to kind of like normalize these experiences, you know. And I think that what Donna was talking about really rings true, in that even as adults, we've done so much work in terms of learning how to cope in healthier ways with stuttering and learning to become more okay with stuttering, all these things that are helpful for us now, but they don't erase our memories of hardship that we experienced as younger people. And I think that those like those memories can become so ingrained just because of all of how traumatic they were in the moment. And so it's kind of scary when I think about how clear some of my memories are as a child and as a teenager, in tough speaking situations. I feel like no one would ever remember those experiences with such clarity, but I think it was because of all of the emotions and the thoughts that, I had experienced alongside those experiences, that really just make those memories stand out so clearly in my mind. And so, I think that, yeah, so as much work as we do to, become more okay with stuttering, those memories are really hard to, let go of.
And I liked how on Facebook we both referred to those memories as scar tissue, because scar tissue might not hurt as much as that original wound, but it's still there, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. I think, even though those scars have healed, you know, that there is scar tissue and that we still have those memories, and that we can't just will those memories away, you know. So I think that having scar tissue is a sign of character, you know, and I think that you'll be able to reflect on hardships that I've gone through and the heartbreak that stuttering has caused has really allowed me to not just get to a better place with stuttering, but has also really shaped who I am in my relationship with myself and with other people as well. And so I look back on the, you know, the quote unquote scars or scar tissue that stuttering has left, sometimes with a bit of hurt, but it's, I'm starting to try to appreciate it for what it is, and not look at it with as much pain as I used to.
Yeah. Oh, I completely agree. I remember the first time I heard someone say that stuttering makes them stronger because of the mountains it makes them climb. I get it now. You know, like, I climbed those mountains, so I'm going to own it because I did it. So it's nice to know how strong one can be. So last question for you, Naomi. I'm going to put you in a really tough spot. I'm going to read some advice that somebody else gave because I think it's wonderful and just get your thoughts on it.
Okay.
So Ori Schneider is a speech language pathologist who splits his time between Israel and the United States. His dad, Phil Schneider, was actually my speech therapist and has been on Stutter Talk many times. So Ori wrote on Facebook that he speaks, quote, with every one of my clients about the holidays and the Passover Seder. I encouraged dialogue ahead of time for people, be they adults or children, to consider what they want. Do they want to participate and share or not? If so, do they want everyone to listen or just want to share quietly? How to handle other speakers interrupting and waiting their turn. I think it's powerful to know that one can choose to speak or not to speak, and the friends and family around them can be agents of change and successful communication by respecting and supporting the communication of those they love to listen to. What do you think of Ori Schneider's comments here?
Yeah, it's really a powerful statement. And I think that there's an incredible amount of value to what he offers. And I do think that tradition is really important. You know, I understand that, traditions wrapped up, in holidays and families and religions is extremely important. That's a part of the holiday, but it isn't the all end all. You know, I do think that we are autonomous creatures and that we have the capacity to make our own choices. And just because a certain religion or, you know, family tradition has occurred in a specific way for years and years and years, it doesn't mean that those traditions can't be rewritten. And so I do really appreciate what Ori offers in that we do have some choices when it comes to our involvement or our engagement in these family traditions, in our holidays. And so, and I also really appreciate his idea about, how important it is to reach out for support. I think that communicating, you know, your fears and your anxieties, but also what you need and what you want in order to self-advocate, with your family is so important, because we do want to make those holidays really joyous and a happy place to be for everybody. And so I do think that, you know, reaching out to somebody in the group, whether it be mom or dad or a spouse or a sibling, or if you're at a synagogue or a church, kind of like reaching out to somebody there that you feel like you can trust, kind of just reaching out, and just like opening up and expressing what it is that you think would help you engage most fully in this experience. I think that's really wonderful advice. And that's definitely one that I would condone.
Yeah. You bring up a lot of great points, and you know, when, I don't know about your house, but when I was a kid, it really, the tradition is strong. Like they really want the youngest one there to read it. But then when I'm preparing for our show today and I'm reading more about Passover, I'm reading that, you know, if there are two grown men at a Passover Seder, they can read the four questions to each other. It doesn't have to be a child. So there is flexibility with all this stuff if we just talk about, if we talk about stuttering and talk about ways to deal with this. So I want to thank you, Naomi, for joining us today. Again, we've been speaking with Naomi Hertzberg Rogers from the University of Iowa, getting your doctorate degree. When do you expect to get the big DR?
It's a million-dollar question. I'm hoping to finish up either in December 2018 or May of 2019.
That's fantastic. And will you come back on air at some point and talk about your research?
Oh, I would love to. I'd be honored to. Thank you for the invitation.
And thank you for coming on air and talking about stuttering during the holidays. It's been wonderful.
Yeah, this has been great. Thanks so much for the opportunity, Peter.